It's been a while since we've been here. We've been gone a couple weeks. 2 weeks ago, we were at the Dallas weekend, and then last week, Sandra and I took an impromptu trip up to the Granbury area, so check out some stuff there. So we're back and happy to be back. Good to see everyone here again. It was a beautiful spring Sunday morning. It was spring break in 2010. Sandra and I had loaded up the boat, and we were heading for the lake. We had Dolly with us and her two cousins. And we stopped along the way to going to Lake Allen Henry to pick up my mom as well. So we were going to have an enjoyable day on the lake, which we did. It was a little bit chilly that day, being spring break, so I don't think we did a lot of skiing, but we did some tubing and we did some fishing and that kind of thing. I think it was even, I don't think the wind was blowing that day either. It's a really nice day. So we spent the day on the water just enjoying the beautiful spring weather. On the way back to Lubbock, we'd stopped at Holly's Drive-In to get some burgers. And the plan was we were going to get some hamburgers and then go over to Mom's house and eat there and then take on off home. Well, while I went in to get the burgers, if you've ever been to Holly's Drive-In, they have great burgers there, and they're in post. But they also take a little while. So it took a little bit of time, probably 20, 30 minutes. I was in there waiting on the burgers. And the kids wanted to play in the boat while I was gone. So I said, sure, that's fine. So when I came back out with the burgers, I said, come on, kids, we've got to go. And called out to them. They climbed, Kate and Kinsey, her cousins, came and climbed in the truck. And everything, you know, was fine, except Dolby wasn't there. And everything gets a little foggy after that point. I don't know if you've ever heard the saying, the fog of war, and there may be some of you in this room who have been in war situations, but they call it, and I personally never have, I only know what I've read, but they call it the fog of war, where you're in a danger situation or you're in a strenuous strain situation. There's decisions that have to be made, and you just, you know, you look back on it and you think, well, I should have done this, I should have done that, but you're really doing the best you can in the situation and what you find yourself in. Later, you constantly second guess yourself, but you're doing the best you can in that fog, that foggy condition. So, Kate and Kinsey climbed in the truck. One came on one side, the other came on the other, but Dolby wasn't there. And it didn't strike me as odd yet that she hadn't made it. The wind was blowing through the cab. The kids were chattering. The adults were talking. We were sorting out hamburgers and things of that nature. So when I heard it, it didn't register with me right away what it was. And what I heard was a low, guttural cry. It was not a scream. It wasn't anything of extreme pain. If it had been a piercing scream, I would have recognized it immediately, but it wasn't. And there was so much chatter and so much disturbance going on in the cab of the truck that I couldn't picture it. I couldn't pinpoint what it was. Well, the next time that I heard it was probably only a few seconds later. It was a lot stronger and a lot louder. Only still not a scream, but more of a cry of shock and pure anguish. It was something like I'd never heard before. So when this cry finally broke through the chaos, I knew that something was very wrong. And then it also occurred to me that Dolby was missing. So I bolted out of the truck and I turned to see a man lifting Dolby from the trailer. And she had gotten tangled up in the framework of the trailer. And the look on her face was one of pure terror and unbelievable pain. And the man gently handed her to me, and I was so frazzled that at first I didn't know what to do with her. We knew that something was wrong with her leg, but, you know, in the fog of the moment, you can't really pin what's going on. So I didn't know what to do with her. Do I lay her on the ground? Do I put her in the truck? You know, I held her for a little while trying to assess what was going on. Finally, we decided to lay her in the back seat of the truck. So we cleared all the stuff out. We laid her down in the back seat. So we could just kind of figure out how bad it was. We knew something was wrong with the leg. So I started to work her pants down, and I realized that her upper leg was bending higher than the knee was. And of course, Sandra's a basket case. You know, she's asking me, is it broken? Is it broken? And I say, oh yeah, it's broken. And she was sobbing. She said, are you sure? And I said, yeah, I'm sure. It's her femur. So what had happened was, her two cousins had gone off the side of the boat and walked around. Dolby decided that she was going to, as kids will do, she was going to climb off the front of the boat, walk along the tongue of the trailer, climb in the back of the truck, and then climb through the back window of the truck. And so, well, she never made it. When she came off the boat, her leg slipped in between the natural V that a trailer makes. She slipped in there, fell over backwards, snapped her femur in half. It was literally at a right angle. So here we are, scared to death, frazzled. You know, we're having to decide, what do we do? I mean, we're in a town we're not from. We're 45 minutes away from Lubbock. Do we call an ambulance? Do we rush her to the hospital ourselves? Where is the closest hospital? Is that going to be Lubbock? Is there anything at all in Post? Is there even an ambulance in Post? You know, and here we have this boat hooked up to us. We have more people than, with Dolby taking up the entire back seat, now we have more people than we can transport. So many decisions had to be made in this foggy thing. And of course, Sandra and I are trying to keep it together because we're obviously upset. So what seemed like an eternity was probably only a few minutes. We decided to drop the boat right there, leave Mom and the cousins to catch a ride with someone back to her house. And we just headed straight for the hospital in Lubbock. Now later, actually en route, I received a lecture from the dispatcher that we should never move a femur break victim. Because when a femur breaks, it tends to splinter. And if it doesn't break that femoral artery, which is the largest artery running through your leg, on impact, it can break while moving the victim. So, well, we didn't know any better, you know. Not an EMS, first femur break for us. So we didn't know any better. Our first reaction was, we need to get her help in the fastest way possible. And of course, I was so frazzled, I didn't know, you know, where to go. Matthew McDonald had been to he works in the hospital all the time, so he actually was on the phone with this guy just step by step, turn by turn, or there's no telling when we would have gotten there. But the drive to Post, from Post to the Lubbock Hospital, is probably about an hour, and I made it in about 35 minutes. But every bump, every sway, every jiggle that the truck made was just drew out excruciating screams from Dolby. And the further we went, the pain was getting worse and worse. As we got closer to the hospital, however, her screams started to lessen a little bit, and we felt that she was going into shock. When we arrived, we thought that they would give her something for the pain before they moved her, but they didn't. They just sent out four big men, and as gently as they possibly could, transferred her to a gurney from the back seat. Now, that's a scream I will never forget. But they wheeled her back for x-rays, and of course, Sandra and I with her every step of the way. But at this point, the pain is just incredible. I mean, Dolby's wailing and crying, "Daddy, please save me," you know, which about broke my heart. But I felt so helpless, but I was trying to be strong for her, yet, you know, being about ready to fall apart myself. But one bright light in this dark moment for me was how Dolby turned to God. She asked me to pray for her, of course, which I was already doing constantly. She even started reciting the 23rd Psalm, which I didn't know she knew the 23rd Psalm, but she started reciting it from front to back. But it was quite heartwarming to see this nine-year-old little girl calling out to God in her time of need. I could go into a lot more detail. There was a lot of things that happened that day. But in summary, they could only set the leg that night. So even though it was splinted, it still hurt her every time she moved. So that was a long night. She didn't actually get into surgery until about noon the next day. And the surgeon had to cut a pretty long gash in her leg in order to put it back together. What they did was they cut the leg open, put the bone back together, and the doctor said it went back beautifully. Just everything just fit back together very well. Put two plates on each side, screwed it all back together. And once she was out of surgery, her pain level was basically nothing. I mean, she did much better after that. She could just have some pain medication just for the cut and the wound. But now, nearly 8 years later, four surgeries later, she just had her last surgery a couple years ago, she's fully recovered, and the only residual effects she has from the whole ordeal is this scar on her leg. Now, this isn't the end of the story. We'll get more to that later in the sermon. But if you like a title for today's sermon, the title is, Don't Resent the Scar. Don't Resent the Scar. Because we all have scars, brethren. We all have experiences in our lives that have forever changed us. Sometimes for the better, sometimes for the worse. But it's how we learn from these things, and it's what we take from them that matters. That's what's important. And many times, what we learn and what we take away from it is up to us. Things happen in our lives that we can either grow from, or we can stagnate. We all have scars, some physical, some emotional. I have actually several scars on my body. I've got two scars on my knee from knee surgeries. I've got one on my shoulder from a shoulder surgery. I've got one behind my ear and some of my nose to have some cancer removed. I've got others from dirt bike wrecks and other things that kids and young men will get themselves into. And I'm sure that some of you have a few of those as well. But those scars that we have are forever reminders to us. They never fully go away, but they are reminders of the painful experiences that we have had in the past. Traumatic events of varying degrees. Now, I don't think it's medically possible to have a scar that didn't come from pain in some way, either from an injury or from surgery. It's not possible. Now, over time, those scars do physically fade somewhat. Some of my scars that I have, you can hardly even see. They do physically become less noticeable. In fact, the memory of the pain fades as well. You know, we don't remember the pain like we did in the days and weeks following the incident that caused the pain. In fact, Dalby says that she hardly remembers the pain from her leg break, even as major as that was. So scars remind us of painful experiences. Some of those come from freak accidents, like Dalby's experience. And then some we bring on ourselves. If I can poke fun at myself for a bit, it's no secret that in the past few years, whenever I've gone to camp, I usually leave just fine and come back on crutches. That's because I tend to get a little too aggressive and get too competitive in sports and push myself beyond my physical abilities. I've also did that in my younger days, riding dirt bikes and just taking jumps that I was not quite capable of handling. So you may or may not have many physical scars, but I bet we all have emotional scars to some degree or another. Some examples of emotional scarring would be, of course, loss of a loved one, a child or a sibling or parents, either from sickness or accident or even old age. Now, these losses can be quite scarring, can have quite an emotional effect on us, especially if it was sudden or unexpected, like from an accident or some kind of injury or even some kind of sickness. Another example might be a breakup of relationships, a loss of friendships, maybe have a rift with a longtime friend and that relationship goes away, or a breakup with a boyfriend or girlfriend, or divorce. Sometimes divorces happen, and those can be very, very painful and have long-lasting emotional damages. Sometimes people do things that hurt us, that say things that hurt us, or do things that cause emotional pain for us. So those things do happen. Another would be example, a traumatic event, and as we mentioned, an injury accident, could be a car accident or a work accident. Could also be sickness, cancer, heart attack, stroke, you know, some strange affliction, some strange disease. Sometimes they come and go, and sometimes they don't ever go away. Financial trouble or loss is another one. Hard times. Sometimes people end up filing bankruptcy, and that can be very damaging, very emotionally draining, very hurtful experience, especially for a man, because a man feels like he needs to be the provider for his family, and he needs to be that rock-solid leader and provider for his family, and it's extremely hard for a man to have to go through that kind of experience. So these are some examples of things that cause emotional damage and scarring, certainly not all of them. And some things are difficult to go through, as we've mentioned, but the pain does fade away. We forget how badly it hurt at the time, or at least we move past it, we move on with our lives, the scar, the pain, the memory of it, all that fades away. But then sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes those emotional wounds are so deep that for whatever reason, we just can't seem to move past it. We can't fully forget. And in some cases, we can't fully forgive if someone has hurt us. We carry this burden for a very long time and we just can't seem to move past it. Of course, there can be many reasons why this happens. It can be have something to do with our walk with God, our relationship with God, or experiences in the past, maybe the way we were raised, whatever it might be. But often, when these things happen, there's one question that we ask. Why? There's something that we as human beings seem to want to know. We want to make sense of things. We want to know the reason for things. And so we ask the question, why? Why did this happen? Was it just time and chance? Was it a freak accident? Was I just in the wrong place at the wrong time? Did we bring it on ourselves? Or we might ask the question, how could this person do this to me? And probably the most often question, the question that gets asked the most, is this. Why did God allow this to happen to me? That question comes up quite a bit. Why did God allow this to happen to me? I have to confess that this is where I found myself in the weeks and months following Dalby's accident. I became somewhat angry with God over this, and I found myself becoming resentful. So I'd like to finish the story that I began earlier, and as Paul Harvey would say, and now the rest of the story. Before we do, let's turn to 1 Peter chapter 5. We're going to read verses 6 through 7. 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 6 through 7. beginning of verse 6, says, "Humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you in due time, casting all your care upon him, for he cares for you." So notice there's a connection here between humility and trusting in God. Trusting in God, basic translation, is casting all our care upon him. So there's a certain level of humility that we have to have as individuals, as Christians, as children of God, in order to be able to let go, to be able to let God take us and work with us and move us and help us in times of need. So for several months after the surgery, once the bandages were gone and the wound had healed up sufficiently, I would rub a vitamin E cream on her scar every night before I put her to bed. And as I would apply that cream to her leg every night, night after night, week after week, I found myself, if I'm being honest, a little resentful of it. And I would try to overcome that feeling because I knew intellectually what I was feeling wasn't right. I mean, I knew God didn't cause this. But as I rubbed that cream into her leg night after night, I would question God and I would say, "Why did you allow this to happen? You know, why didn't you protect her that day? Why didn't you guide her feet so that she stepped safely across the tongue of that trailer? Now she's going to have this scar, you know, on her leg for the rest of her life." And I wrestled with that day after day, month after month. And of course, the scar was always there. It was always staring up at me as if taunting me, you know, reminding me of this internal struggle that I was having. And I don't know what changed exactly. I can't say that there was anything in particular. Nothing happened to change my thinking. Perhaps it was God's Spirit working with me and speaking to me. But one night as I was going through this nightly internal struggle, it really hit me that this scar was evidence of the miracle that she had survived this terrible ordeal. That God had delivered her from what could have been a deadly accident. She could have died that day. And if that femoral artery had been cut, two things could have happened. One, she would have either bled out before we got her to the hospital. Or two, had we been able to apply a tourniquet, she could have lost her leg before we ever got to the hospital. So neither of those things happened. And as it turns out, you know, I spoke to you earlier that how we were torn with the decision whether to go to the hospital or call an ambulance. Well, as it turns out, at that very moment, there was an ambulance in post. But we came to find out later that they were dealing with a situation where a girl had fallen through a plate glass window and had a shard of glass protruding from her chest. So there was no ambulance available at that time. So I really feel like that God had put it in our minds or directed us to just go. Put it in the car and go. Because there's no telling what could have happened, you know, if we hadn't. So Dolby could have easily died that day. And somehow, some way, I came to that conclusion and I realized that scar was evidence that she was here. So ever after that, I stopped feeling resentment. I actually began to appreciate it. I began to be thankful for it. Because that scar was evidence that she was here, that she had survived, and that she was alive. Let's turn to James chapter 1, verses 2 through 4. And this is one of those very difficult passages that I've struggled with for years, trying to understand. And I think it's one of those that we all struggle with from time to time. But James chapter 1, verse 2. That isn't, oh, sorry, I was in chapter 2. Okay. James chapter 1, verse 2 says, "My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into divers temptations, knowing this, that the trying of your faith works patience. But let patience have her perfect work, that you may be perfect and entire, wanting nothing." I probably don't fully understand this scripture in some ways, but I never had as good a grasp on it as I do today until that moment, until this happened. Because I never could understand, how could you ever learn to be joyful about a trial, about joyful about something, especially when that your kids go through? You get through it, you get past it, but to be thankful for it, to really appreciate it, that's another matter. And I finally understand a little bit better what that's like. Now, another version talks about the testing of your faith, how it produces something. The ultimate goal is that we be perfect and complete, wanting nothing. And so these trials, as we go through them, they can produce something in us, and they can have a good result if our walk with Christ is good, and if we allow these things to develop and work out in us. it's human nature to try to make sense of things, to try to understand why. That eternal question. But sometimes there's just no way that we can do that. So we learn what we can. We do the best that we can in the situation that we find ourselves in. Sometimes we can figure it out. You know, sometimes it's pretty obvious. We know the reason. I pulled out in front of someone and got hit. I didn't conduct myself well in a relationship and the relationship suffered. I got careless in some way and I got hurt. I attempted something that exceeded my abilities and I got injured. I mean, those things aren't too hard to understand. We kind of know we had that coming. We make mistakes and we know that sometimes there are consequences for those mistakes. But there are also times when we don't make mistakes. And that's where it becomes a lot harder. Where someone does something to us or something happens to us that we're not in control of. That we're not at fault. If someone gets hit by a drunk driver or gets cancer or some sort of sickness or disease and maybe even lung cancer and never smoked a day in your life. A spouse decides that they're not pleased to dwell. You know, we started this marriage as equally yoked and we start in the church and this is not the way I thought my life would end up. And now they've left the church and sometimes they leave their marriage and those things are just very hard to understand. A loved one dies unexpectedly from accident or illness. And you can't help but want to know why. We want to make sense of things. We want to know that there's a reason for everything that happens. We feel that we must have an answer. But sometimes those answers are just not there. But it's been my experience that even though there's no answer to this plaguing question, why, there are often some very important life lessons that we can learn. Just like with Dalby's leg break. Was there a reason that it happened that way? I can't say for sure. I know that I learned a very important lesson from it. Do I believe that God's hand was involved in having a little girl break her leg so that I could learn something, some important life lesson? I don't think so. God doesn't work that way. I don't believe that a loving God would cause a little girl to suffer so that her father could learn a lesson. But I do believe in time and chance. And I do believe that things happen in this life. Sometimes bad things happen to good people. And sometimes they do happen for a reason. God didn't necessarily cause it. But it does happen for a reason. Case in point, let's turn to John chapter 9, and we're going to read verses 1 through 3. This is another one of those scriptures that I've wrestled with and wondered about. But I think it clearly speaks to the point that we're making here today. John chapter 9, verse 1 through 3. This is a story that the disciples were involved in. It says, "And Jesus passed by, he saw a man which was blind from birth. And his disciples asked him, saying, Master, who did sin, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" Now notice that the Pharisees only offered two options here. They felt that someone must have sinned, which was not uncommon for the time. That was a very Pharisaical way of thinking. So someone must have sinned to cause this. There's a reason for this. And it had to do with someone's sin. And Jesus answered, "Neither has this man sinned, nor his parents, but that the works of God should be manifest in him." Other versions say, like the NLT says, "It was not because of his sins or his parents' sins," Jesus answered. "This happened so the power of God could be seen in him." So, brethren, how do we know that some things that we go through are not for that same reason as well? That could be a light to others, to reveal the power of God through us, through our example. An example of trust, an example of humility, an example of yielding to God. I do believe that God got us through this horrible situation. And I learned that day that God's hand was directly involved in my life and the life of my family. So I stopped resenting the scar. I looked at it completely different from that point forward. Brethren, we should all try to do the same thing. We should stop hanging on to the past. We should learn the lessons that we can. Utilize the Holy Spirit to grow, to heal the wounds of the past, to let those scars heal. And we shouldn't resent the things that we've had to go through to get to where we are. Let's turn to James chapter 1. James chapter 1, we're going to read verses 12 through 15. Beginning of verse 12. It says, "Blessed is the man that endures temptation, for when he is tried, he shall receive a crown of life, which the Lord has promised to them that love him. Let no man say, when he is tempted, I am tempted of God." See, God doesn't put tests in our way. He doesn't put trials in our way. He doesn't use our weaknesses against us. He doesn't put one of our weaknesses in front of us and say, well, let's just see how he does with that situation. Let's see how she does with that situation. God does not act that way. That's Satan's job. Satan is very good at that. But then it says, let no man say when he is tempted, I am tempted of God, for God cannot be tempted with evil, but neither tempts he any man. But every man is tempted when he is drawn away of his own lust and enticed. Then when lust has conceived, it brings forth sin. And when sin is finished, it brings forth death. So brethren, there are things that we go through in life that we've brought on ourselves, isn't it? We've committed sins. We've done things that we regret, that we shouldn't do. We know we shouldn't have done it, and we regret those things. But we repent of those things. And we should know that God has forgiven us of those things. Because sometimes the reason that we can't move on beyond those things is because we haven't forgiven ourselves. And the Word of God is very clear. We need to have the faith that God has forgiven us. Because if we can't forgive ourselves, then we tend to struggle and that wound never heals. We need to have that faith so that we can move on with our life. Psalms 103 verses 10 through 12 speaks to this. Psalms 103. This is probably one of my favorite scriptures. In verse 10, it says, He has not dealt with us after our sins, nor rewarded us according to our iniquities. For as heaven is high above the earth, so great is His mercy toward them that fear Him. As far as the east is from the west, so far has He removed our transgressions from us. We need to believe this scripture, brethren. We need to believe that when we have repented and we have changed and we have overcome those things, that He has forgiven us. He has washed that out as far as the east is from the west. And that's one thing that I really appreciate about this time of year and the Passover, is that as we prepare for the Passover, it's our opportunity to go back and look at ourselves deeply, see the things that we've done, acknowledge what we've done, but also it's an opportunity to have it all washed away. You know, we know that God has forgiven us, but we go to that Passover service and He symbolically washes it all. We take of the blood, we take of the wine and the bread, and we wash our feet. And it's all washed away. And it's like a new beginning. And brother, we need to believe that that is a new beginning so that we can move on and not be hamstrung by the past. Where we stagnate spiritually, we stagnate emotionally. You know, we say, oh, I just can't forgive myself for the thing that I did. Or I cannot forgive that person for what they did to me. Or I just can't move past this thing that happened to me. We must not play the blame game. You know, whether or not there's anyone to blame or not, it doesn't help matters. We need to move on. See, brethren, if we don't learn from life's trials and we resent these things that we've been through, then we drown in our own self-pity and our own bitterness and our own anger. And we miss a great opportunity because that opportunity is to grow, to become more like Christ, to draw closer to God. Because these things sometimes happen and it's an opportunity. But we can waste that opportunity sometimes and submerge ourselves in bitterness and anger. And that's not what it's about. So the good that we could have gleaned from a situation turns into a very negative thing that suppresses our growth when it was an opportunity to actually grow and become closer to God. See, just as God has given us free choice to follow Him or not, we have a choice on how we respond, whether we respond for good or whether we respond negatively, you know, for bad to our trials. See, Dolby's tragedy ended well for all intents and purposes. She lived, she survived with no ill effects other than the scar in her leg. But not all tragedies end so good. Whether it's the loss of a loved one, the loss of a relationship that will never come back, perhaps injury with permanent damage, sickness, chronic illness, that issues that just won't go away, financial troubles that don't go away, loved ones who leave the church, divorces that happen. So it's easy to talk of faith. It's easier to talk of faith and personal growth when everything turns out okay. But what about those times when it doesn't? See, those are the real trials, brethren. Those are the trials that can cause real severe scarring in our lives, emotional scarring, the kind that we don't get over so easy, the kind that sometimes make you question your faith and even your belief in God. But no matter the severity of the trial, truly the same principles apply. It's in those times that we need God more than ever. We need that close relationship with Him to help us move on, to help us recover, to help us heal. And those often take more time and more prayer and then more time and sometimes more time. But if we truly have the right kind of relationship with God, then over time we can come to grips with it. We can come to the point where we don't resent the scars, where we're able to find the good in it, what we're intended to learn, how we can grow from it, acknowledge what we learned, how we grew, or how we're continuing to grow through whatever trial, whatever it is that we're going through, and move past it, and even learn to appreciate those things that are happening in our lives because we're seeing the growth that it's bringing. Because they have contributed, all these things contribute to who we are and who we have become. So brethren, in conclusion, let's don't resent the scar.